Welcome to the Black History Short Stories Podcast. I'm your host, Amandre Johnson. Glad to have you on episode 6 on this podcast. We discuss short stories from Black history, and we try to get a person who lived through the time period. Because here we think it's important to carry on the stories of those that lived through the times and to understand a first-person perspective, and most of all, to continue the legacies and the memories that are important to our future. Here today, we have Monica with us. Please tell us your birth year and where you were born.
I was born in 1972 in Roanoke, Virginia.
Outstanding. So our last podcast, we talked about a Black liberation group. And we're going to kind of continue that theme here. And we're going to talk about another Black nationalist group called the Republic of New Africa, also known as the RNA. They originally spelled Africa with a C, but then ended up spelling it with a K to kind of reflect the dialect of their African ancestors. So the Republic of New Africa is a Black nationalist organization. It was created in 1969 on the premise that they want an independent Black Republic. They wanted Black people to be autonomous. And they thought that the United States should give the Republic of New Africa the South. They wanted South Carolina, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, and Louisiana. And they described them as subjugated lands. Their manifesto demanded that the United States government pay $400 billion in reparations for the injustices of slavery and segregation, which is less than some of the proposals today's reparations. So they were doing all right, I guess. They made a great point here in their manifesto that I had never considered. They said that African Americans should be allowed to vote on self-determination, as that opportunity was not provided at the end of slavery when the 14th Amendment was to the U.S. Constitution incorporated African Americans into the United States. So I had never thought about that, is that when the 14th Amendment was written, it, you know, made Black people citizens, but it never considered if Black people wanted to be U.S. citizens.
Right.
I had never considered that until I started doing this research, and I was like, that's a very valid point to say, you know, you never even gave us an option. How do you even know we wanted to play this game with you? How do you know we wanted to live with you after all these atrocities that have happened? So I did. I thought that was an interesting point. But they did a whole outline of what they thought the Republic of New Africa would look like. It was going to be organized based on, and I hope I looked this up, so I hope I don't pronounce this wrong, Ujamaa. And I'm pretty sure that's one of the principles of Kwanzaa too. But it's Tanzania's model of cooperative economics, community self-sufficiency. They would have limited political rights, or citizens of Republic of New Africa would have limited political rights, unions would be discouraged, freedom of the press would be curtailed, men would be forced to serve in the military, and polygamy would be allowed.
Wow.
It's interesting. I know when you read through that and you listen to it and, you know, it's not the first things some people think of when you think of a Black state and all Black state, but this was their start. This is their idea. But it came and started with two brothers, Milton and Richard Henry. And they were friends and associates of Malcolm X, and they founded an organization called the Malcolm X Society. And it was devoted to the creation of an independent Black nation within the United States. Milton and Richard ended up changing their names to, and I hope I'm not pronouncing these wrongs, Gedi Abadeli and Amari Abapukari Abudeli, respectively. And I had to look up, you know, because I've heard people say respectively at the end of the name. Have you heard people do that before?
Yes.
I had to look up what that means, and what I found is it means in the order given.
Yeah.
Oh, you knew that?
Yeah.
Good for you. I'm learning new things every day. So they went ahead and they started off in Detroit, and they organized a meeting of 500 Black nationalists in Detroit 1968, they had chosen a president of the Republic of New Africa. The president was former NAACP leader Robert F. Williams. He was going to be the first president. They went ahead at this meeting, drew up a Declaration of Independence and a plan to establish New Africa. The group knew that the United States would not find this, you know, okay. And they figured that the U.S. would reject the demands, and they made plans for armed resistance and prolonged guerrilla warfare. So they was war ready when they made this up. You know, they went into it knowing that the U.S. would probably say no, and they weren't going to have that. Some interesting things about Robert F. Williams is Robert F. Williams was, they use the term exiled from the NAACP. And I'm not sure what that meant when I read through it, and I couldn't find much on it. But Robert F. Williams ended up leaving the country. He's from North Carolina, and he had to end up leaving the country because for kidnapping. In 1961, apparently a white couple, had gotten lost in the black part of town in Monroe, North Carolina. So this is, you know, in the 60s at the height of civil rights and the KKK and segregation and whatnot. Williams said, hey, you guys are out here by yourselves. You need to come stay at our house until you figure out what you're going to do. So you're in a black neighborhood. None of these people mistake you for Klansmen. Well, the couple at first was like very grateful that they were taken in and, you know, felt like they were being protected. But what I read is the police, who was made up of mostly Klan members, right, and partly the FBI, convinced the couple to say that Williams had kidnapped them.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so the FBI put out a warrant, and, you know, Williams, you know, he flew the coop and read that a bunch of people across the U.S. helped him escape to Cuba. And he was gone for a long time. And during that time, he lived in Cuba and he lived in China. And he eventually came back in 1975, and the charges were dropped when he returned. Mm-hmm. So,
wow,
interesting about Robert F. Williams. After that, when the FBI found out about it, they got involved in both the federal and local governments on suspicion, and they often had violent conflicts with the Republic of New Africa. The RNA was a target of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, COINTELPRO. And that was an anti-radical program of surveillance, disruption, and subversion. In March of 1969, at Detroit's New Bethel Baptist Church, who was, you know, ironically pastored by C.L. Franklin, who was a SCLC, the Southern Christian Leadership Conference, who was also the father of Aretha Franklin.
Oh, wow.
The police raided the church. It was an anniversary conference, and a shooting occurred because the RNA, you know, they carried them things. They wasn't playing with you. And one officer died. The police arrested 140 people inside the church, and it became a huge deal. A judge named George Crockett, who had previously represented the United Auto Workers and defended activists who were being persecuted as communists at the time, set up an impromptu court in the police station to hear the charges against the arrested black activists. And he worked through the night, and Judge Crockett ended up freeing many of those people. And it sounds like he was, I agree, you know, to set up a ruling in the middle of a police station, you know, that really holds some power. He said, you know, we're not even going to take this court. We're going to do this here and now. So what that caused is that caused part of the RNA to say, we need another setup. So they end up going to Mississippi, Jackson, Mississippi. And of course, the police in Jackson, Mississippi raided the RNA headquarters, and another officer was killed. This time, 11 RNA members, including the founder, Imari Abedeli, were arrested and convicted for assault, murder, and sedition. Have you ever heard of sedition?
Yes, I have.
Oh, okay. Because I had to look this up. So, you know, for those of us who did not know, sedition is a charge you get charged for inciting a rebellion against the government, which I find odd because this country was founded on sedition, but whatever.
And not only when you're saying your story, you're saying that the police raided them, so kind of odd for a, you know, conspiracy when they are raiding them.
I agree. But I don't know. I guess the Revolutionary War, the Boston Tea Party was all good. But whatever. Three other members, this happened in a separate incident while driving to RNA headquarters, ended up killing a police officer in New Mexico who had pulled their car over. These guys, who their names were not in this document that I read, and I couldn't find much about them, ended up hijacking a plane and escaping to Cuba.
Wow.
I know, right?
Wow.
I don't know how easy planes were at that time, but.
And everybody's going to Cuba.
I don't know. I need to do more research to figure out what's the deal with Cuba. Is there like a non-extradition clause from Cuba or something?
Not sure.
I'm not sure either. But apparently, hey, just know, Monica, it goes down. Go to Cuba.
Right, absolutely.
So, Amari Abadeli goes to jail. He ends up getting released. And soon after he was released from prison, he and six others were convicted on federal conspiracy charges. So they go back. He was then released in 1980, and I respect this guy so much because you can tell, like, reading his article, he's a super, like, hard worker and refuses to be, you know, held back by anything. Because after his release, he went on to earn a PhD from Temple University in political science and end up teaching at several colleges, writing numerous books and articles on Black separatism, which he still advocates. After all this, the popularity of the Republic of New Africa kind of diminished, with most of its leaders going to prison, but it still claims to this day to have between 5,000 and 10,000 members, and its headquarters was eventually moved to D.C. Okay. One thing I did learn and I loved about the Republic of New Africa is, like, they were adamant about what they were doing. They really focused on prisoners, like, because they thought of prison as the new slavery.
Right. So,
as they were in prison and they talked to people, a lot of their members were people who were recently coming out of jail, who they had, you know, advocated for, and they were all about prisoners' rights. And because they truly believe that the disproportionate race in prison, I mean, it is Black people, and they saw that, and they saw that as the new slavery. So they telling people, hey, we have to lift you up. We have to be separate. We have to do something. Okay. And their job was to try to form their own nation.
I kind of agree with that, that prison is the new slavery, because once you go to prison, when you get out, it's hard to get jobs, housing, everything. So you kind of like back in a rut. You can't get ahead.
Right. The Republic of New Africa identified prison and slavery as foundational elements in the United States. And they said that those are problems that only reparations and self-determination could address. And I definitely agree that there is a problem with the prison system. Have you heard of the school to prison pipeline?
No, I haven't.
And this is a whole nother topic. But my professor, me and my professor talked about this, and I did my own research on it and was amazed. And the year escapes me right now, but I know it happened to me. So prisons are built years in advance based on data at that time. So for example, when I was in third grade, they take third grade statistics. They check if you get free or reduced lunch, if you've been suspended, And if you live in like low income, your area you live in, they take those three factors and they look at starting at third grade. They look at those statistics. And if you check those three boxes, they build you a bed.
Oh, wow.
Because you're more likely, statistically, you are more likely to go to prison.
Oh, wow.
Yes.
Wow, I didn't know that.
So, like, they make...
That's going on today?
I'm not 100% sure it's going today, but I know when I talked to my professor about this in 2017, like, this is where I first had heard of this and started learning about this. And, yeah, they build your bed in prison. So they take that number, and that's how big they built their prisons in their area.
And what is it called again?
The school-to-prison pipeline. Because there are statistics that show, like, going into school, starting at, you know, elementary school, Black and kids of color specifically are, like, three times more likely to be suspended. And students... Mm-hmm. who have a higher percentage of being suspended or also have a higher percentage of going to prison. Like it's a whole thing that, you know, a domino effect. So, you know, that's how they make those statistics. And I thought that was unreal that they built a bed for me, you know, at 8 years old.
And wow.
Yeah. So, but that's a whole nother podcast right there. But when I like I said, that, and that's something that they would talk about in the 60s. You know, that's something that they were identifying and knew there was a problem back then. They also founded their principles on Garveyism. And Marcus Garvey was, like, back in 1920s. He wanted Black nationalism, and he responded to, in the 1920s, in response to marginalization and discrimination. But he thought Black people should go back to Africa. He did.
Wow.
I had done some research before about when slavery was over, after slavery ended, there was a proposal to say, hey, just, you know, get Black people and don't go back to Africa. And there's a country founded on slaves who returned to Africa. And it's a country on the west coast of Africa. If I was looking at a map, I'd see it now. I want to say it's Liberia, but I'm not 100% sure. But it was founded on slaves returning to Africa. But they based their principles on that because, you know, Black nationalism, they wanted to uplift Black people. The New Africa also did something interesting is, you know, in the English language, how... you have a capital I, like I's by themselves are capital.
Right.
They lowercase I, but they capitalize we, the W and we. Because the we is more important than the I.
Right, right, right.
Okay. I love that. I did. And they also if you joined or you were a supporter of the Republic of New Africa, you often change your name to reconnect with your African ancestry and reject your slave name that you received at birth, just like the two brothers did. And I actually knew somebody in college who, when he introduced himself, he was an African name. I was like, oh, okay, where are you from? He was like, DC. I was like, oh, okay. I was like, are your parents like from, you know, Africa? And he's like, no. I was like, oh. And then I saw like, somebody else had called him another name off of paper, and I had no idea who it was. Like, he called himself, like, he referred to himself as Chooks, and to this day, I don't even remember his birth name because never responded to it. And when I asked him, I was like, so why did they call you Chooks? He's like, I don't do my slave name. He's like, I don't do that. I was like, respect, guy.
Okay.
So,
all right.
I think that's interesting. I would have to do a lot more research to find out my African name. But.
Well, I think that whatever name your parents named you would be your name. The only thing that would necessarily need to be changed would be the last name.
Okay.
I mean, but I could be wrong. I don't know.
We could do like the movement and just have Africa as the last name. That seems appropriate.
Oh, yeah. True.
But what we're going to do, we're going to take a quick commercial break and hear from our sponsors. Welcome back to Short Stories of Black History. And I just want to give a quick shout out to the Perlow podcast with Shane, Dr. Ty, and the Colonel. They did a podcast recently, the Perlow podcast. They do top 10 lists. And they had the most intense argument about candy bars that I've ever heard. Monica, I don't know if you have a top 10 candy bar, but their lists would make you yell at them so bad. Have you ever purchased a whatchamacallit?
Yes.
Have you?
Yes. That used to be the thing when I was growing up. Whatchamacallit, yes.
You know, I never once went in the store and said, where's the whatchamacallits?
Yeah, that was the name of the candy bar, and it was pretty good though.
Yeah, if you say so. They also talked about Hershey's being one of the best candies ever.
Well, Hershey's are good. They have a variety of different kind of. Yeah, they're pretty good. My favorite is Milky Way though.
You know what? That made the list too. So if you wanna think about your list and go listen to their podcast, I highly recommend it. Also, go listen to Dr. Ty and the Colonel, who they just did a live cast on the movie Wanted. And I had no idea about all the underlying innuendos that go on in the movie Wanted. And they do a great job, talk about the backgrounds and the characters. So I definitely encourage listening to them. But we're at the part of the podcast now to where we ask questions. So what I do is I give a list of questions to our guests, and we discuss the questions, because what I'm trying to do right now is I'm trying to pick topics that are still relevant today. So this topic is relevant to today because this comes up in the discussion of where do we move forward from the protests, from the violence, from the racial injustice. How do we move forward? And one of the options that was put on the table is Black separatism. I know we've had this argument in my household to where maybe, you know, as Black people, we need to have our own place to where it's, you know, a separate thing. And I like to hear opinions and feelings on that. So have you ever considered a, you know, a Blacks only part of the United States?
Honestly, I have.
Okay. Why so?
Because I think Black people are treated so unfairly, mm-hmm. but I don't feel like it's just Black people. I think it's people of color in general. Mm-hmm. So sometimes I think that if we had our own places to live with our own, you know, cities and towns and functioning well, that we would be better off. But then I don't think it's that simple, because I don't think all white people are bad. Mm-hmm. And then you have people that are mixed, you know, uh-huh. not necessarily Black and white, but they could be Black and Asian, Black and whatever. Uh-huh. And then would you say you're not welcome because you're not all Black? I mean, like, how would you justify it? You know, because I feel like then we'll be doing the same thing that we feel like white people have been doing to us for years.
I agree. So when this argument was first brought up, and I read about this stuff, it's divisive, but for a reason. It is. Mm-hmm. It's divisive. And I think sometimes, like, when white people say, you know, go back to where you're from and stuff, they're being divisive for the reason based on your skin color. I think mm-hmm. this proposal is Black people being divisive because how they're treated. Like, you know, you tell your kids, if someone's mean to them, don't play with them anymore. You know, go do your own thing or find different friends. And I think this is trying to say that. And I also think what you said about having to choose who comes in and out. And that was a part of my argument. I'm like, I said, I don't like anything divisive. I think everybody should be included. And this community would be for Black people, but not exclusive to Black people, is an argument I've heard. Is, you know, this community is for Black people, but everyone is welcome.
Yes, yes. So, I could agree with something like that. Yes.
I do. I agree. I think if that was gonna be the proponent, you know, that is what the best option would be, because you are right, you know, Black people are disproportionately affected, but also people, all people of color.
Right.
So I do agree with that. And like you said, not all white people. I have plenty of white friends. I got a lot of them. And if they were my neighbors, I wouldn't be mad at that, you know?
Exactly, exactly. So, I have a lot of white friends too, and I love them, you know? Not try to be funny, but they're good to me. So I can't like be prejudiced toward all white people because of some white people. That's right. Like clumping them into a category together.
Uh-huh.
Like they do us.
Indeed. And Dr. Mathis said on the last podcast, he said that, you know, white people who are prejudiced, they often do have like black friends. You'll hear white people say, I got black friends or whatever. And they like the black people that they know. It's, mm-hmm. you know, black people that they don't know that they generalize.
And right.
I thought that was interesting to find out. How do you think America or the world would be if it were separated by race only? And that's a huge question. That is.
Okay. So, this is just, of course, my opinion.
Of course.
But I believe that in the beginning, I believe we were separated.
Uh-huh.
Like, I don't really like to use the word race because we're all human beings. So it's only like really one race.
Uh-huh.
So if you say separated by color, then I will say in the beginning, we were separated by color.
Uh-huh.
Black people lived in Africa and Asians lived, you know, China, you know how I'm saying? So we were separated
uh-huh.
until... a group of people came in and wanted to colonize and take over and sell people. And, you know, then it got all distorted.
Uh-huh.
And I believe also that had it not been for that, some of the now today third world countries, I believe they would be prospering okay. and would be better off had Caucasians not invaded and, you know, did whatever they did.
Okay.
And then the fact that so many inventions of today were created by people of color.
Oh, absolutely.
So if we would have went back or separated back then, I believe we would have been far more advanced than the white population.
Uh-huh.
And we would have been, to me, better off, but hey, to each his own.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think that, I honestly don't know. I don't know how the world would be because I would say when people were communicating with each other in their capacity, like it started off as a venture for like spices and stuff. Like
right.
fireworks come from Asia. I don't want to live in a world without fireworks. I want some of those too. don't keep all the fireworks to yourself, Asia. But I also agree with what you said that there was a lot of resources stripped from Africa. You know, you talk about
right.
Mansa Musa, who there's a story where, you know, he crossed the country with, you know, an ungodly amount of gold.
Right.
Like, is extremely prosperous person and prosperous nation. Egypt and the pyramids, you know, today they don't know how those were built. So, I mean, I definitely agree with that. I wonder how the advancements would have been. Because I was reading a book and on colonization of America about Native Americans, and often to justify the removal of Native Americans from their lands, they would call them savages and wild and whatnot, and the same things they would say about Africans. But that is totally giving a one-way perspective, because if you look at it, you know, while in ancient medieval times, they were having a hard time figuring out what to do with their pee and poop. And in Egypt, they had, you know, aqueducts and they had systems to handle all of this. when the Pilgrims arrived in North America, they wouldn't have survived had the Native Americans not showed them how to farm. You know, they couldn't have survived without them. So to call these people savages is absolutely ridiculous, when if they would have left you alone and done nothing with you, you would have died. You know,
it's a point of you do what you have to do to get ahead, and then once you get ahead, you stomp on the people that helped you get where you are.
Right. And I think, you know, in history, and I love history, I love studying and researching, like, it's, if you don't look at it from a Eurocentric view, it really changes the narrative of things. It truly does. It really does. And I think that everybody needs to see that view. And that's something that we have to address in education system, is that Eurocentric view. And I tell you that we're better about it today. I can tell you that as a teacher, I don't always teach. I teach both sides. I teach a Eurocentric view, so you see it from their side, but I also teach it from every other side too. And, you know, and when I talked about Christopher Columbus in the class, there wasn't a student in there who left the classroom feeling like Christopher Columbus was a hero.
Absolutely not.
because when you look at him, and that's a whole nother story, but it's that Eurocentric view that makes him look like a hero.
Well, that's because history is always written by the people who win. That's the part that you hear about who won. You never hear about the other side of the story. So it's good that you're talking about both sides of the story.
I agree, and that's super important. And I don't know. I don't know if I would say that they won, but they definitely had guns at a time where other people didn't, and that makes a huge difference. The history of the gun is a deep-rooted history, and you know, it changes things. It does. It changes things. So if you could create your own country, what would be different in how America is today? Well, let's say they said, Monica, you're going to create the Black Republic, or, you know, what would you change, or how would it be different? Oh, and that's it's a huge question. It is.
It is. There's so many things that, you know, you could do, but number one, I would say that the main thing I would say is equality. There would be equality for everyone, no matter your race, religion, status in life. You know, everybody would be on a level playing field. There'd be no racism. It wouldn't be tolerated of any kind. Mm-hmm. I think we should have free health care, free education, and I think it should be free trade schools where people can learn a trade and don't necessarily, you know, if they're not being a doctor or a lawyer or something, they don't have to go to a college. They can just go to a trade school and learn plumbing or electricity or something like that. I think it should be a place where everyone helps the elderly and the young. You know how they say it takes a village to raise a child? Well, everyone would participate in making sure that elderly were taken care of and that the young were taken care of. And I don't, there would be no purpose or reason to have any homelessness. Because that's just, I just don't understand why there's homelessness today. It's just beyond me. I feel like some of the things like the free healthcare and free education, I think that would come out of taxes. And when I say come out of taxes, not like, you know, make you pay more taxes, just the taxes that you're paying, just divvy it out to some of those taxes is going to healthcare, some of those taxes is going to free education. And also I feel that if it's a point of us breaking out from the world we know today, that I do believe that a lot of this stuff could be helped with reparations.
Indeed. I was going to say that listening to you is like a lot of this stuff that you're talking about is in the part of reparations. And a lot of stuff you talk about are the original principles that, you know, America was intended to be founded on.
Right.
And I do believe that the intention of all these things of equality, regardless of, you know, who you are, what you do, what you believe, I believe that intention was there, and maybe the follow through just hasn't been as great as it should have been. It should be.
Well, I think the intention was there on one group of people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I agree. And I wouldn't know, like these people who did the Republic of New Africa, they really sat down and really thought through, you know, their own country and what it needs to look like. And, you know, I like some of the stuff that they were saying. I didn't love the every male has to join the service.
Right. No.
I didn't love that. I understand it, but I don't love that. And maybe it's just the world we're brought up in now is that we have the right to choose, and we, you know, we have the right to say no, and that's okay. Because I'm accustomed to that now. I don't plan on doing things that I don't really want to do.
I don't think it would be fair for every male to have to join the military. Like I said, I think there are plenty enough people who want to serve in the military. Serve in the military. So I don't think that everybody should be forced to serve in the military.
I agree. I also don't, it also talked about the freedom of press will be curtailed. And I don't like that either.
Because
if one place controls or it's checked, you know, I listen to a bunch of different news places, and I try to put all the information because they give it from their view and their angle, and I try to find some center point when I listen, and getting it from one direction is not the best, you know, the best idea, I would say. It also said limited political rights, and I don't know what that means. I'd have to have seen that document to understand what they mean by limited political rights. Polygamy. Is that something you all right with?
Absolutely not. That's a strike, a big strike.
So, I know, I'm sure there's a lot of guys out there who said, polygamy, this place isn't so bad. So, I don't know what you choose if you... Yeah, I got to serve in the military, but I can have six wives.
No. Would you be okay with that?
Oh, absolutely not. I have trouble, you know, loving one woman. And that takes all my time and attention. And that's all I can do. That is. But going on to the next question, and I ask these questions to, you know, every guest who comes on the show, regarding Black history, what do you consider to be the most significant event in your life?
Well, see, I thought about this and I'm like, it's so many small things that have happened, but I believe the most significant thing is Obama being president.
Oh, okay.
Because even though I didn't grow up with a whole lot of racism, mm-hmm. it was enough to know how certain people felt about my people of color and people of color in general. Mm-hmm. So to see Ronald Reagan and Clinton and everybody, it was normal, you know, just, okay, we have a president, da da da. But when Obama became president, it was like, wow, a Black man. Mm-hmm. Now, granted, he's not 100% Black. He's a mixed man, But how they say, any one drop of blood makes you black. So that, to me, that was a big accomplishment.
Indeed. Indeed. And our last guest also credited the most significant black history to Obama for him also. But he said a different reason. I'm excited to hear you see that, because that's two different opinions and two different reasons. But the same event, equally significant to two people for their own reasons. And I think that's huge. Mm-hmm. I agree with you. So I talked about this too, that, growing up in a unique situation, because we grew up in the same area where it's, predominantly black people. And you don't believe that you experience the racism all the time that you see, because that's not your experience with people. And I said, and it took me to really go to a predominantly white school in a very rural area where, I was truly the minority, to look around and be like, oh, this is real. Mm-hmm. This is mm-hmm. what they talk about. I had instances to where I could say, oh, that was just racist or whatever. But this was different. This was like, there's racism right over there. I could see it. They got it on their door,
Yeah, growing up, I didn't really experience a lot of racism. Like when I was in elementary school, I had two best friends. One was black. One was mixed and one was white. Mm. We were best friends. And everything was, cool. There was no, we didn't treat each other bad. Nobody really said anything to us. But it wasn't until I got like in my mid 20s that I started, when I'm out there in the world and I start experiencing and seeing things, that I was like, wow, like, this is real.
So, and that hit me hard too, because the same thing happened to me. Like I said, when I go off to college or whatever, and then I learn about, because we just experiencing it later on in life, but we're I won't say we're experiencing it. We might have experienced it and not known it. We came to the realization later on in life. Mm-hmm. And they built that bed for me when I was 8.
Right.
I'm thinking about, Doug and Hey Arnold. And they're thinking about profiting off of my downfall, off of my impoverishment.
That they created.
Yeah. So I you think about that, and that's nuts. That is. So who is the most influential person in your life and why?
Okay, so this is going to sound really stupid, so don't you laugh.
Okay.
But I have two.
Okay.
And they're both dead. That's sad, but they're both dead. The first one is my grandmother.
Okay.
Because she taught me, well of course, my mom and my aunts too, because they all have basically the same thing. But my grandmother taught me about God. She taught me to stand up for myself. She taught me, family is what matters, to stick with your family. And, she taught me to be self-sufficient. So it was like, she just tried to pack everything in me that she possibly could to make me a better person. And she also taught me not to judge people. Because she would always say somebody else's situation may be worse than yours, or somebody's situation or your situation may be worse than someone else's. So it's not good to, to judge people at all, and to help people. To always help people when you can, no matter what color they are, no matter what race they are. If you can help them, help them. Wow. So I have to give her a lot of credit for that. And the second person, okay, you ready for this one?
I sure am.
Tupac.
Okay. Please go in. Please tell me.
Tupac, because, okay, people always, the media always showed him in a bad light, spitting at people and doing all this crazy stuff. But
he did those things.
He did. The time to listen to his interviews and listen to what he was actually saying. Like, he was the first person to that I heard of, called Trump, and you got all this money, but yet people are still, you know, starving, hungry, homeless. And then he started talking about athletes and actors and people who had made it, but they're not going back to help, you know, other people make it and be successful, or even not even, you don't even have to be successful as far as stardom, but successful in life, period. Like, give to Black colleges, give to the community. And he was that type of person. And nobody really credits him on that, because all the media focused on was the negative things that he did. But he was what I would consider an activist, a political activist. He, you know, mom, dad in the Black Panther Party.
Yeah. Asada Shakur, right?
Yes. Hmm. Yeah. So, you know, it's like I listened to him in my early 20s. Yeah, my early teens, 20s, whatever. But then it was like, also, I have to think about, this was the time that I was experiencing the racist behaviors. Mm. So, you know, in a way, it kind of helped me understand what was really going on.
Okay.
I know that sounds crazy, but...
No, it absolutely doesn't. So first, let me... like to address, like, you know, you said that your, you know, your grandma, your mom, your aunt, those were like extremely influential people in your life. And what I got out of that is they taught you how to be a strong Black woman.
And true.
That is a huge thing in, you know, in the world today. And I said all of my guests, besides last episode, all of my guests have been Black women. I said, that is super intentional. So, because that is 100% intentional. Because voices need to be amplified, and, you know, as long as I'm doing this, the majority of my shows will be with Black women, and that's just how I want it, because it's my show. So, yeah, I agree with that. And I think it's interesting that you said Tupac, because celebrities and rappers, actors, all these guys do have an influence. I agree. I definitely do. Have you heard the new Lil Baby? What's his song called that just came out?
I probably haven't.
It was a song about race, and it's a song about the protests that's what's going on. Something's got to change or something like that. I can't remember. Mm-hmm. But previous to that song, if you would have asked me about Lil Baby, I'd have told you he ain't rapping about nothing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Waxed up. But when I listen to him, I hear him, and you know, he's talk about what you're talking about, that he has a responsibility to give back and to help. And you know, I don't know his net worth or how much money he has, and if he can't help financially, he's out there on the ground, he's making song. And you know, I might be old, but the younger generations love him. So when they hear him, they hear this message, you know. And they're seeing this stuff. So I definitely know that's not stupid. You said it was going to sound stupid. It's not stupid at all. It's not. Because I always said, you know, when people don't always enjoy my music choices, but, you know, I can't listen to somebody that's not talking about anything.
Right.
You know, you got to have some substance in your music.
Right.
And I definitely agree. And I think I'd like to think that, you know, celebrities and athletes and people are better now about giving back. You know, I know D Wade has done a ton. Have you seen that commercial to where, you know, he gets to meet people that he never met before and he changed their lives?
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, that commercial is so heartwarming. There's a lady on there who says he's never met her before, but her house had burned down and he had donated to it, or his, you know, or he donated his money. And I guess his PR team reached out to her. He never met her and she just wanted to thank him. And It's super nice. And, you know, LeBron has a school.
Yes, I love it.
Yeah, you know, so people.
That's one person that I just did not, I don't know, I just didn't like LeBron James until he started speaking out and, you know, found out he had donated to schools and was doing all this stuff. And I was like, hey, you know, I misjudged this man. He is a good guy, you know. And I'm like, that's what more people should be doing.
I agree. And I like to think that there are more people doing it.
I don't have anything bad to say about Oprah, except for you went to Africa and opened a school for the people over there, but there were people over here who needed just as much that I don't know. Not saying that Africa is not, she shouldn't have helped Africa. She got enough money where she could have did both. You know what I'm saying? It's just, I don't know, just certain things just don't make sense to me.
I won't speak ill of Oprah. You're playing a dangerous game there, lady. I saw an interview with Oprah where it said she had an avocado and she was like, oh, I love avocados and whatnot. So instead of, you know, doing what you and I would do, buying avocados, she started an avocado farm to have her like all avocados and just on site, just anytime she wants them.
Wow.
Yeah. But neither here nor there. But I would like to think that there are a lot of people that are giving back. And, you know, the giving back is, I don't have money to give to
educating people on their history.
That's what I'm saying. That's my way.
You are giving back.
I do the best I can for the youth because, you know, for people like y'all, because y'all helped me so much. And, you know, here I am today. I'm doing all right. I'd like to think so. But
proud of you.
Thank you. Is there anything else you would like to add?
We as Black people put away foolish things, stand up together in this fight, because we say we're together and, you know, to an extent we are, but we still do things to each other.
Okay.
That we shouldn't, you know what I'm saying, that we shouldn't do. So I feel like we have got to be better. I don't know the word I'm trying to use, but we've got to be better stewards of our lives, our well-beings, our finances, all of that. We have to do a better job than what we're doing, and we have to stop being afraid. Mm-hmm. To raise our children. Because I feel like when they did the no prayer in school and you can't beat your child if they do something, then I think that.
Well, you said if they can't beat your child.
Well, you know, they say you can't leave whips or whatever, child. You know, so when I think when they did some of those things that they created a situation where kids nowadays feel like they're in control. We as parents kind of don't want to get in trouble, so we don't, you know, we let them get away with too much. And like I said before, it takes a village to raise a child. When I was growing up, if I did something, I could be at the park and I did something I wasn't supposed to do. By the time I got home, my mama knew about it. I got trouble or whooping, spanking, whatever you want to call it. The neighbor could correct me. I mean, nowadays you can't do that. And I think that's a problem.
I've never considered that, because I don't have that experience. So yeah. Did nothing slide in my house.
That's not true. That is not true.
Oh no, my mama knew everything that was going on. So,
well, I mean, for the most part, yeah, but I mean, like, you wasn't around your mama 24/7.
No, but because I knew, but I also knew that there was consequences too.
Well, that's true, because we were in the group that said, okay, you're not going to tell me how to raise my child. I'm going to child, when they're wrong, they're going to be punished however I see fit. And y'all didn't turn out so bad.
I agree. It's also, I think it's a part of, like, when I look back on it, the psychological warfare that, you know, parents put on us was deep. Going to make you get your own Switch was diabolical. Oh, man.
Well, could that, but it would teach you, okay, I can't do, I bet not do that again.
Oh yeah.
No.
And the fury when you bought back the twig.
Because we grew up that way. Well, you're lucky. We grew up with, you know, we would have to pick our Switch. And if we got a Switch that was too small, we got to go pick another one so she could wrap it together.
Oh, and no, that didn't happen.
We had a razor strap, a belt, you know, you're supposed to sharpen razors with it. But my grandmother would use that to whoop us if we got out of line. Now, she's not, she didn't do no 7, 8, 9, no whoops like that, but she whipped you 3-4 times, so you know not to do it again.
Indeed. Yeah, I don't know. I know different, I guess that depends on just different parents, I guess, how they go. I only have one experience in the household, so my experience is the only one I'm familiar with.
And if you go by the Bible, it says, if you spare the rod, you will spoil the child.
Yes, it does say that. Yes, it does. Well, and
I spared the rod and I spoiled two of mine. And
you see, you know they go hear this.
That's okay.
All right.
It's the truth.
All right. That's fine. Well, thank you for joining us today. If you would like to reach out to us and give us ideas for the podcast, tell us ways we can improve, make a correction in my research, or maybe you just want to give your opinion on things that we talk about on this podcast, I would love to hear that. I love hearing different sides of stories, especially ideas that don't think in the same way I do, because that's how we all grow. That's how we all learn. And everything we talk about in this podcast, you know, it's okay to change your mind. That's how you grow. That's what growth is, getting new information, reassessing the situation, and saying, you know what, I was wrong then, and that's okay, because going forward, you won't always feel that way. But feel free to email us at bhshortstories@gmail.com. That's B as in black, H as in history, and short stories plural. See you guys next week.